Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies and protocols, frameworks. I talk about the things that worked for me, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way. And I do this because I believe to my core that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And so sometimes I talk about what does it mean to do this student-centered learning in the midst of a chaotic, changing world, which is what we talked about the last couple episodes. It was all about AI. But also, a lot of times we talk about things like design thinking, inquiry-based learning, and yes, lots and lots of episodes are about PBL or project-based learning. And that's what today's gonna be all about. And one of the things that you're gonna hear me reference a couple times in this episode is something called Boost PBL projects. And I wanna tell you about that ahead of time. If you go to boostpbl.org, I have created these projects along with my colleague and collaborator, A.G. Giuliani. And we have designed these projects to overlap between design thinking and PBL, where there are sprints, mini projects, and projects. And all throughout this month, I'm gonna be working on doing final revisions for my updates to those projects. So there's more scaffolds, more supports, leveled readers. So go check it out. It's at boostpbl.org. And without further ado, let's dive into today's topic. So today we're gonna be talking about what it means to incorporate community involvement into PBL. And in particular, we're really going to focus on what does it mean to make the most of these community partnerships in every phase of a project rather than just the big final public launch. And to get there, I want to start with a quick story from last week. So last week, I led a workshop in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is a really cool city. They call it, I think, like Beer City or something. And you know what? It's got some great breweries. I might have visited a couple of breweries while I was there. And while I was there last Monday, I did this PBL by Design workshop. Now, if you're not familiar with this podcast, you haven't heard me talk about it before, I'm a huge fan of treating project-based learning or PBL as the pedagogical framework, as the learning framework, but design thinking as the creative framework. And this has a few advantages when we incorporate design thinking into PBL. First, it's going to add structure and accountability. So it breaks the projects into distinct phases, and that also reduces cognitive load. So you're less likely to hit what's called cognitive overload, because the extraneous cognitive load, the thinking about, you know, what do I do next? How does this work? That kind of stuff is reduced because you've made things more clear for your students. And I find that that's really helpful for students with ADHD. For many neurodivergent students, you get the idea. But also, when you do PBL by design, it incorporates the creative framework used by industry professionals, by nonprofit groups, public sector employees. It is used, design thinking is used in a lot of different spaces. And so you're actually mirroring what they're going to use in the real world, which I think is really powerful. But I think there's something more. I think the biggest advantage in incorporating design thinking into PBL is that it moves PBL beyond the notion of just having a finished public product and into this larger idea of developing empathy. And you know what? As a side note, not to be super political here or anything, but this tiptoes on politics for a second. I think our world is in dire need of empathy. I think that our political climate, I think that our public rhetoric has, in many cases, really gone downhill. And I think it demonstrates a lack of empathy going on in our culture. And so, yes, it's going to prepare students for the creative life. Yes, it's going to prepare students for an unpredictable world. But more than that, it's going to prepare them to be empathetic human beings, which I just think we need in our world. So if we think about this idea of empathy, I love the way that the design thinking expert, the CEO and president of IDEO, Tim Brown, describes it. He says, quote, it's not us versus them or even us on behalf of them. For a design thinker, it has to be us with them, end quote. So as I led this workshop, I shared a story of a project that had failed because I was approaching it with a design for them mindset. My students had gained some initial understanding of their audience, and then they began to work on the project. They failed to partner with their audience. In fact, I would say we didn't even do basic check-ins along the way. And so the net result was a project that just didn't fit the audience. So I contrasted that epic fail with a different story, a teacher who had built empathy with a local audience of people at a senior center and a nursing home, and they did these board game projects that were on some level really simple, but were actually really powerful in terms of their empathy. And in fact, this designing with became so powerful that the students then did an oral history project connected to these senior citizens. So I thought, you know, this is an important thing that we remember. We should be incorporating community partnerships in every phase of the design thinking process. I then had participants complete this chart, and we just did every phase of the launch process, which I'll get into here in a moment, but it's look, listen, and learn, ask tons of questions, understanding the process or problem, navigating ideas, creating a prototype, and highlighting and fixing. And for every phase, they had to look at their project and come up with potential community connections. This was a rapid fire. It was like a 15-minute activity, but it led to really great conversations. And actually, during the break, one of the participants, this one woman, walked up and she said, "That was really eye-opening for me." "How so?" I asked. And she said, "I teach the littles." Now, when she said this, I want to point out that literally, my mind went to these pointy-eared, like 3-inch-tall people with tails. And that's because I grew up with this book series called The Littles. I don't know if anyone else has ever read that, but she wasn't talking about that. She was talking about early elementary. So then she continued, "I feel guilty because our projects don't have a big public display at the end. We do a family night, and that's about it. I mean, it doesn't seem that authentic to me. The kids love it, but they're second graders. Come on, they get excited about doing a dance for brain breaks." But then as I started to plan out potential community connections, I realized that we partner with the community when we start out and do a field trip. And we invite guest speakers in when we do research. And we have guest speakers come in to give feedback on the prototypes. I mean, I'm not sure how authentic that is in the PBL world, but to the kids, it's a big deal. "I think it's great," I answered. "If it's relevant and age appropriate, then that's authentic. It sounds like you're already making community connections." Now, for me, this is a reminder that the authenticity isn't defined by this so-called PBL world, right? There's a lot of gatekeepers in the PBL world saying it has to be done this way, this gold standard way. Screw that. I'm telling you, if it's real to the students, then it's real. If it meets their developmental needs and it challenges them academically, then it's authentic. If it tackles, you know, real-world problems and connects to the larger world, then guess what? That is real. That is authentic. And I want to say this kind of struck a nerve for me, because when I taught middle school, I taught in this Title I middle school with a limited budget, a lot of testing, a lot of high pressure situations. And, you know, my kids did projects that were never on the news. Our documentaries were never screened at a film festival. And I would hear these stories of like high school students who designed sneakers, and then they got to create real prototypes and wear the sneakers that they created. We never got that, right? In the meantime, I'm like, dang, we're prototyping with duct tape and cardboard. What's wrong with us? But over time, I've realized that authentic community connections don't have to be splashy. They don't have to be big. They don't have to be newsworthy. Often these are humble moments where you break out of the four walls of your classroom and develop empathy with the larger community. So I want to talk about how we integrate community connections into each phase of a project. We're going to start with phase one, Look, listen, and learn. So in this first phase, students gain awareness of the project, the problem, and the process that they're going to do in a PBL unit. Some people call this an entry event, provocation, project launch. That's all just semantics. To me, it's the first phase, whatever we want to call it, okay? The core idea is that students gain a basic understanding of what they're going to be doing, and it's a great moment to tie into community partners. This might involve a field trip. So when we did a civil rights museum project, my students visited actually two different museums next to each other, and they used rubrics to judge the quality of the exhibits from a UX design standpoint. They also talked to curators and volunteers. It was really cool. And this broadened their understanding of why museums exist and what things we might need in our own exhibits as we designed a physical civil rights museum in our building. But it doesn't have to be a huge event, right? This was a big field trip with buses and all that kind of stuff. When a third grade classroom worked on the Design an Inclusive Playground project, which was part of our Boost PBL materials, their teacher had them visit three different playgrounds and observe the spaces. And their job was to see how people played in those spaces, but also to see if they could find simple machines in action. So it was a little bit of a scavenger hunt. And it was really, really cool. So that's one way you can do field trips, which is really cool. You can also bring in a guest speaker. So you might have a speaker who's a scientist, an engineer, an artist, whatever it may be. You can have a focus on empathy. So again, going back to the notion of doing the board game project with students, maybe you go to the nursing home and you have them interview people at the nursing home. I remember we did this other Boost PBL project that was the global food truck project. And one of the things that a teacher did to add some authenticity was just having the students interview small groups of people and ask them about healthy food choices and about what type of food they ate from around the world. And it was a really cool moment of just building awareness ahead of time in the project. But this awareness then leads to the next phase, which is asking tons of questions. In a lot of classes, this phase is typically student-generated. Like, all of the questions are created by the students. And I generally think that's a great concept. We want to tap into student curiosity. But this is also a time for teachers to allow students to design with. So for the inclusive playground example, they might meet with parent volunteers, and together the students and the parent volunteers come up with questions for research. They might meet with some neurodiverse adults and say, what are some questions you had as a kid in terms of, you know, playing on the playground? So again, what we're going with is this notion of having them co-create the questions with the community. But we can take it another step further, and we can also have community members model the process of asking questions. So you might have engineers who say, you know, this is how we ask engineering questions. Or you might have an artist talk about, you know, here's the types of questions we ask. Maybe you're having a filmmaker who does documentary filmmaking share some of the initial research questions that she asks. I remember when I taught journalism, you know, we had a journalist come in and talk to students and actually model for them how we ask open-ended interview questions and follow-up questions, because those are really different from traditional research questions, which tend to be much more closed. So we can not only create questions with the community, we can have the community come in and teach students how to ask certain domain-specific questions. Phase three is understanding, and this is the research phase. And there's a lot of ways that we would do research. And typically, you know, you're going to have kids do online research. Maybe they'll do research with AI. You can check out a previous podcast episode about the facts cycle. If you look at the show notes, I have linked it to the show notes and to the the blog post that connects to this. So if you go to spencereducation.com, go to articles, you'll find the articles there. You can do a search, just look up Facts Cycle, F-A-C-T-S. But if we want to add some authenticity, there's a lot of ways that we can bring in the community into this research process. It could be expert interviews, and that can be really powerful in terms of just getting them to connect with experts who might be business owners, local experts, government officials, specialists in a field of study, all kinds of different people. It could be museum curators. Again, lots of different opportunities to interview experts. They can also do field trips. So you might do field trips where they gather observational data. Maybe they look at some objects, things like that. You can have them do community surveys. When we did our Project Social Voice PBL, the community surveys were a driving force in terms of building empathy with the local community. In some cases, you might take a step further and do internships. I love the examples that I've seen of internship-based research that's done in things like entrepreneurial programs or apprenticeship programs that are PBL-based. And it could be service. They do some kind of community service, and through serving in the community, they gather research and kind of see some of the pain points. But what that's going to do is that process of doing research is going to fuel their navigation of ideas. So it's going to allow them to have the background knowledge to actually plan their projects. All right, so that takes us to phase number four, navigating ideas. And if we go back to Tim Brown's idea of designing with rather than designing for, we might want to incorporate the audience into the navigation of ideas. So it might be that we actually bring in audience members or community participants to help with the brainstorming process and to help navigate the ideas together as they go from brainstorming to actually planning the parts of their project. And that can be great. That can be one way that we do it. We might also ask for community members in this navigation phase to come in and just offer some critiques or some feedbacks on student ideas. And so an idea of this was, I think about working with a school that was doing an entrepreneur program in their business classes, and they were really rethinking how they wanted to do business courses. And they brought in community experts, entrepreneurs, to give students feedback doing a process called a pre-mortem, which is something that they do in a lot of business circles where, you say, pretend this product or project failed, and let's deconstruct why. And so there, these community participants were functioning almost like thought partners in the process. From there, students are going to create a prototype. And if we think about creating a prototype, what does community involvement look like here? Well, this is one chance where students can actually share their process with the world. I love how Austin Kleon describes it in the book, Show Your Work. He says, become a documentarian of what you do. And so students are actually sharing their process with others. Maybe they might create videos, they might create podcasts about it, but they're just sharing the process online. From a marketing perspective, this can be a great chance for your school to connect to the larger community, and they can know, hey, what's actually going on in our schools. So that's one way that we might approach community involvement in prototyping. But we can also bring in the experts and, in some cases, have them model or demonstrate how to do some of the prototyping processes. This might involve something like students who are industrial designers or engineers showing how to use CAD machines or 3D printers. It might involve, someone who's a public speaker modeling for students how to do public speaking before their big final product. And, often we just need to find people in our community. I love this idea of reaching out to parents, guardians, anyone who's in charge at home and saying, what are some skills that you have? And then tapping into them as community volunteers. All right. And then let's think about phase six. Highlight what's working and fix what's failing. So the idea here is that we can get community volunteers to help with the revision process. I still remember when I taught middle school, I had a group of these were retired English teachers, and some of them were journalism teachers as well. Some of them were people who had worked in fields of writing, journalism, obviously, but also fiction authors. And I had them volunteering to give feedback for my students on their scripts for our documentary that we were doing. And these community editors were able to just give a fresh set of eyes, a new perspective, something that I couldn't offer. And it was really powerful. But I've seen things like coaches who help with public speaking, or marketing experts to help students revise their messaging before they launch their work. So there's a lot of ways that we can say, you know, is there a way for the community to offer feedback for us? And then the final piece is launching your work to the world. And I think it's really important that when you launch your work to an authentic audience, you're saying, I'm not afraid to be known. There's something really powerful about sharing that final product to an authentic audience. And this authentic audience doesn't have to be huge and big and splashy. It can be a Shark Tank style committee of three judges who judge the student work during a presentation. It can be a family night that you do. There's all kinds of ways that you can incorporate the public launch. And this is really where we tend to see a lot of PBL teachers do really well. A final thought that I want to share is this. We don't have to include every aspect of community involvement, right? We don't have to have community involvement in every single phase of the PBL process. But what we can do is incorporate some community involvement in strategic moments. And I think what that does is it just adds such a layer of authenticity, and it makes the learning more meaningful, and it gives students something to strive for, and it helps them see how the subject area connects to the local context. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Again, if you want to check out those projects, go to boostpbl.org. You can find them there. And would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast? That would be so awesome. Also, maybe tell a friend about it. That's one of the best ways. So subscribe, leave a review, tell a friend. Any ways that you can show the love, I would appreciate it. Sometimes it feels like I'm just sharing this podcast out into the ethos or into the atmosphere, and I never know who's listening to it. So it makes a big difference when I see one of those reviews for me. It's just a great way to connect. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.